I want to thank everybody for tuning in. You can find us on Facebook at Rose City Native Radio. You can reach us with music, events, and more at pdxnativeradio@gmail.com. Again, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week, Indian Country. Stay cool. Stay Native.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operation and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Policy and Governance Committee meets on the third Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if the meeting is being held.
The following program is a rebroadcast. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred. Thank you for tuning into KBOO Portland.
Hello everyone, you're listening to American Indian Airwaves. From Marcus Lopez, I'm your host, Larry Smith. Today on American Indian Airwaves, we go to the Yellowstone National Park and State of Montana regions and get an update on the protection of buffalo relations as the recent killings of 13 buffalo relations and escalation by hunters taking buffalo relations lives. We'll get an update with the communications director of the Buffalo Field Campaign. All that and more here on American Indian Airwaves.
You can hear when the moon shines bright, the lone blue elk in the black of the night. You can hear the whisper in the valley. And you know when Kamakani blows to the bahu drum, it's the warriors who are marching down the mountain. Because history ain't no mystery to me.
Today on American Indian Airwaves, we go to the West Yellowstone, Montana region and Native American nations throughout the region to get an update on the recent increase in the taking of buffalo relations lives. This past December 29th of 2022, over 13 buffalo relations and yearlings were unexpectedly taken from us when a semi-truck ran into a family of buffalo. That and ranchers continue to escalate the taking of buffalo relations lives throughout the regions. Today on American Indian Airwaves, Marcus Lopez and myself have the honor and pleasure of speaking with Tom Woodbury, the communications director of the Buffalo Field Campaign. The Buffalo Field Campaign has been at the forefront of protecting the last free-roaming herd of bison relatives in the lower 48 states and promoting and advocating for the increase of the bison habitat and populations. This is Tom Woodbury with an update on the protection of the buffalo relations throughout the Yellowstone, West Yellowstone, Montana area and its sacredness to Native American nations.
We're speaking to Tom Woodbury here on American Indian Airwaves 2023. Exciting year. Tom, tell us about what's going on with the Buffalo Phil campaign to our listeners?
Well, yeah, thanks, Marcus. First, I know I wanted to be sure I conveyed Happy New Year to everybody out there on behalf of our executive director, James Hope. And I know he wanted me to say hi to you, Marcus, and tell you all that he wishes the best for you all in the new year. So right now, it's an interesting time right now. Buffalo Field Campaign, of course, is out in the field with the buffalo whenever they wander or migrate, I should say, beyond the park boundaries. And so that's basically two operations, one on the north side near the gate at Gardner, and then here near Horse Butte on the west side of the park. And we've had a very early migration this year, so we've been really busy out in the field on the north end. That tends to be monitoring the hunt by tribes and state hunters, just, you know, watching the bison and where they're at in relation to hunting and making sure everything, you know, just basically bearing witness to whatever's happening out there with the bison. And as a result of a hunt that's carried out under, you know, very difficult circumstances at the insistence of Montana Department of Livestock. So it's not a ideal situation out there at all, but it is, of course, reestablishing relationship between the tribes and the bison, which was severed over a century ago. So, you know, we are strong proponents of treaty rights in relation to buffalo, and so we rejoice at the fact that the tribes are having this opportunity to reestablish their relationships with the bison and engage in honorable harvests, which, you know, we feel confident all the tribes are doing that, honoring the sacrifice of their buffalo relatives and so forth, and feeding their families, and, you know, and kind of beginning the beginnings of real cultural healing from the beginning of that, or the renewal of that relationship, that sacred relationship. So there's hundreds of bison out of the park on the north side and keeping people busy over there. On the west side, we're all kind of carrying heavy hearts right now because we recently had one of the worst loss of bison on the road on Highway 91 that has ever been experienced, when 13 mothers and yearlings were mowed down on Highway 191 in the dark by a semi-truck. And that's, you know, it's hard. And there was one calf that we know of, or one yearling that was orphaned. It was part of the accident because we saw him the next day wandering about dazed and confused and missing a horn and kind of bloodied face and near the crash site. The bison that come out of the west side of the park over here under Horse Butte year-round habitat, the only, you know, like really secure year-round habitat in Montana for bison, it's their calving grounds. That herd is in trouble. You know, it has declining population in contrast to the overall population of bison in the park. And it is the most direct lineal descendant of the original 23 bison that survived the Holocaust, the Buffalo Holocaust. And it's really heartbreaking then to see, you know, so much carnage involving yearlings and their mothers, especially because we've been shepherding them around, you know, the Butte as well as we can for the last couple of months. And mostly those bison had been hanging out at a sanctuary on Horse Butte, and very little hunting pressure over on this side of the park, in contrast to Gardner. So, you know, there's a lot of national attention to this tragedy on Highway 191, and so we're quite busy trying to turn tragedy into opportunity and healing by calling on our political leaders and, you know, Park and Forest Service and Deb Holland and Department of Ag to insist on a safe wildlife passage for buffalo coming out of the park onto Horse Butte, because 70% of all of the bison vehicle collisions happen in a 7-mile stretch on Highway 191, and it's been going on for too long, and there's really no excuse for it. So we're going to start a campaign here to generate support for the first buffalo bridge in the world at the world's oldest national park, to create safe passage for buffalo from Yellowstone into their year-round habitat on Horse Butte. And we're getting a lot of support already for that. And there is $350 million that Congress has appropriated nationally for safe wildlife passage and over the next 3 years. So we think it would be, it's time to address the problem there and help that herd, which is the subject really of, or the reason for the fact that Fish Wildlife Service is considering our petition to list Yellowstone's bison as a threatened and endangered species under the Endangered Species Act. So, in a nutshell, that's kind of what's going on with us this season. And this is my first season as communications director, so I'm, you know, trying to hit the ground running.
In talking, you mentioned the $350 million appropriation by Congress, and of course that begs the question, you know, where does the Montana Department of Transportation stand in relationship to this funding and in building this bridge for our creating a corridor for the buffalo relations, and I was wondering if you can speak to that. And also, I noticed there's been an increase since the last time we spoke with Buffalo Field Campaign. There's been an increase in the taking of buffalo relations outside of the slaughter recently on Highway 191. I was wondering if you could speak to that as well.
Okay. So on the first topic, Department of Transportation for Montana, well, and for all of the states, are responsible for administering and funneling that $350 million down to wildlife passage projects. So their support is obviously key. And in the past, we've consistently asked the Montana Department of Transportation for traffic calming measures along that 7-mile stretch, and while they cooperated with us in as far as signage and in our own efforts to reduce collisions, we haven't had any success in reducing the speed limit through that stretch, which is the short-term solution, right?
Right.
I also represent Buffalo Field Campaign on the Montanans for Safe Wildlife Passage, which is a coalition of a large coalition of groups involved with improving wildlife passage across highways in Montana. And that group is working with Department of Transportation and Fish, Wildlife, and Parks on addressing wildlife passage issues in Montana. So there's a lot going on, you know, and I'm sure with that money, we've known for some time that money would be coming available. So I think all the states are kind of gearing up. And I understand as well that there is a Highway 191 corridor study that some consultants are preparing that is going to be issued very soon, any day. And that will contain, I don't know what that report is going to say, but it will have recommendations for improving wildlife passage along 191. So we're basically just trying to ramp that up and to just say, you know, look, this is the heart of our wildlife, you know, refuge system in the United States. It's the first and oldest national park in the world. And unlike Banff National Park, just over the border to the north, which has like 13 wildlife bridges and nine tunnels, and you know they've spent millions and millions of dollars up there safeguarding wildlife passage around Banff National Park, and it kind of puts us to shame, you know, because we don't have any safe wildlife passage like bridges and tunnels around Yellowstone. So I think this unfortunate tragedy is a real wake-up call and will become a catalyst for the kind of changes, well, you know, for getting the world's first buffalo bridge built. That's basically what it comes down to. And I don't know how anybody could not want that on the Madison River here. So, you know, if we can address 70% of all bison vehicle collisions with a bridge and some fencing, you know, I think it's in everybody's interest to do that.
And you're listening to American Indian Airwaves. We're speaking with Tom Woodbury, Communications Director of the Buffalo Field Campaign, on protecting the buffalo relations throughout the Yellowstone State of Montana region and its importance and significance, and the work of the Buffalo Field Campaign and Native American nations are doing to protect the buffalo. And now back to the interview.
So the reason that the number was so low for 2021, I believe it was like 20 or 30 or whatever, that was almost all from hunting. Mm-hmm. But the IBMP and the State Department of Livestock had set a cull target for that last year, 2021, of over 1,000. And that didn't happen. And part of that is because the Park Service has been studying all the science on bison and are not going along anymore with Department of Livestock and Montana's insistence on maintaining or suppressing the population. So the population right now is like 6,000, right around 6,000, and that's as high as it's ever been since the original 23. As far as the Park Service is concerned, there's room for more. Up to 10,000 is kind of what the science is showing them, and it's also showing them how beneficial the bison are on the land in the park, and the place, so that not only can the park accommodate more bison, but it actually be healthy for the ecosystem. And of course the ecosystem at large, you know, outside of the park, another 12,000 square miles of national forest land that the bison should be inhabiting but are have been precluded. You know, that needs to change as well. So basically, there is a growing population of bison because the park is adopting science-based management criteria over the objection of the state, which wants to continue reducing the population down to half of what it is right now. And the reason that there is an uptick in the number of bison being killed this season in part has to do with the growing population of bison, especially the northern herd. It's also because there's increased demand from the various tribes for hunting opportunities. So they are not using the trap facility. They're not trapping bison and shipping them off to slaughter as they used to do at the state's insistence. They're not willing to do that anymore. And they're keeping the trap facility closed to accommodate the hunting pressure just outside the park there. And so because in part of the flooding this last summer, and of course in part because of the weather, that the bison came out of the park in large numbers about a month and a half ago. And so there are plenty of tribe hunters over there, especially from different tribes, and wardens from the different tribes regulating the hunters. And you know, as far as we've been able to observe, all the hunting has been according to what is permitted under the IBMP, the Interagency Bison Management Plan. And so so there have been a total of about 130 bison killed so far this season. That includes road fatalities and hunting.
Thank you, Tom. Mm-hmm. What I was going to ask you, for our listeners, they might not be familiar with when you talk about Yellowstone, when you talk about the different states. Why don't you start with a bird's eye view? What are you talking about? What geographical area to our listeners? And the total number of buffalo. And then let's start with that.
So everybody is familiar with Yellowstone National Park, and that's where the surviving that's where the survivors of the ecocide from the 19th century, when our government tried to wipe out the species. There's been a pretty healthy population there for some time, or at least a viable population. There are actually two herds of bison in the park. So when the bison migrate out of the park within the greater Yellowstone ecosystem, and the park only represents about 15% of their historical range, this herd's historical range, then they run into interference. And for years, there was no tolerance for bison outside of the park anywhere. That's still true in Idaho and the Targhee National Forest. In Montana, largely because of the efforts of Buffalo Field Campaign and all of its supporters, we have year-round habitat now on Horse Butte, which is the buffalo's calving grounds, where they come out in the spring and have their babies, and where it's easier for them to access grass because slightly lower elevation than the park. And then on the north side of the park, there's much less tolerance for bison movement and migration into the national forest land. And so so right now there's pressure there for more habitat, and pretty much everybody, all the partners involved in bison management right now, who met last month in West Yellowstone here to discuss winter operations, they all support expanding or allowing the bison to expand their migration into the greater ecosystem, into the the Custer and Gallatin National Forest lands that surround the park in Montana. And the state is the sole sort of holdout that is creating obstruction, basically, or obstructing all the other partners from being able to cooperate. And, you know, basically meaning tribes and the National Forest Service and the Park Service. So what the other important thing to recognize is that because of a petition being granted by the courts under the Endangered Species Act, the Fish and Wildlife Service biologists are intensely studying bison science right now and determining, they're doing what's called a threat analysis, which is basically determining whether or not Yellowstone's bison should be listed as endangered or threatened. And one of the primary threats that they identified right from the start, from announcing the threats analysis, was the limitation on bison habitat, and basically saying, you know, that they are limited to 15% of their range right now. And so that's basically why we're here. Buffalo Field Campaign is to advocate on behalf of bison to get them back on the land in their ecosystem as a self-supporting herd, and to allow the restoration of relationships between the tribes and the buffalo and the land, you know, like, because by addressing and restoring those proper relationships between humans, buffalo, and the land, that's how we're going to end up actually resolving our climate crisis and coming back into proper relationship with ecosystems all over the world. That's basically what scientists say is called for.
Well, thank you, Tom, for that. And for how many buffalo are we talking about, Tom?
Yeah, as I said, there's 6,000, about 6,000 wild buffalo in the Yellowstone ecosystem in Yellowstone National Park, and there aren't many other wild bison left in the United States. I think there's something like 300,000 buffalo total in the U.S., but most of those are domestic herds and are not allowed to are treated as livestock.
And that was Tom Woodbury, the communications director of the Buffalo Field Campaign. He's speaking on protecting the buffalo relations throughout the Yellowstone Park region and the state of Montana, and the work that the Buffalo Field Campaign and Native American nations are doing to protect the buffalo relations and the importance of the creation of wildlife corridors as a way to help protect all living relations, particularly the buffalo, throughout the region. You're listening to American Indian Airwaves. That concluded part one of this two-part interview. We're going to take a short break and come back with the second part of our interview with Tom Woodbury of the Buffalo Field Campaign here on American Indian Airwaves.
Remember the times that you have held your head high, told all your friends of your Indian claim, proud good lady and proud good man. Some great-great-grandfather from Indian blood sprang, and you feel in your heart for these ones. Oh, it's written in books and in songs. We've been mistreated and wronged. Over and over I hear those same words from you, good lady, and you, good man. Well, listen to me if you care where we stand, and you feel you're a part of these ones. When a war between nations is lost, the loser we know pays the cost. But even when Germany fell to your hands, consider, dear lady, consider, dear man. change come about, my dear man? Or are you still taking our lands? A treaty forever, your senators sign. They do, dear lady, they do, dear man. And the treaties are broken again and again. And what will you do for these ones? Oh, it's all in the past, they will say. But it's still going on here today. The government's now on the Navajo land, then all the Inuit and the Cheyenne. It's here and it's now, you can help us, dear man. Now that the buffalo's gone.
Now That the Buffalo's Gone by Buffy St. Marie off the album Soldier Blue here on American Indian Airwaves. In the second part of today's program, we continue our interview with Tom Woodbury, Communications Director of the Buffalo Field Campaign on Protecting the Buffalo Relations. We go to the Yellowstone National Park, Montana, and surrounding Native American Nations regions and get an update on the work of the Buffalo Field Campaign in protecting the buffalo relations throughout the area. There has been an increase in the taking of buffalo relations lives from the December 29th accident, taking over 13 buffalo relations, to hunters' increase in taking buffalo relations lives. And so the work of the Buffalo Field Campaign continues. They provide us an update and the work they're doing to help create and advocate for ecological corridors along Highway 191 as a way to help protect the buffalo. This is Marcus Lopez and myself interviewing Tom Woodbury, Communications Director of the Buffalo Field Campaign, here on American Indian Airwaves.
Yeah, that is so important. People can read it more on the Buffalo Field Campaign website. There's all kinds of information and wonderful information at your website. But just shifting a little bit more and on this notion which you had on the ecological consciousness, it's about especially the 200 countries talked about this banner commitment dubbed 30-30. Do you want to comment on that for our listeners?
Yeah. Well, that's basically the science of survival for the human species, you know, and it's based on the work of famed American biologist E.O. Wilson, who was a Harvard biologist, and he, before he died, he passed just over a year ago, but he said that the way for humans to not just survive but thrive through the climate crisis is to restore half of the world's oceans and lands as functional ecosystems. So the 30-30 commitment that all the countries of the world have made basically is saying that we're going to shore up the good, what's out there right now, what's kind of functioning. 30% of the land and 30% of the seas by 2030. And they've recently committed up to $30 billion a year for that purpose. And that's to just sort of create a foothold for species to reverse the extinction crisis and the severe depopulation of wildlife species in the world, but it's a waste. It's just a landmark for eventually getting to 50% of the oceans and lands by 2050. Because that's if we're able to do that, then we'll draw down enough carbon CO2 from the atmosphere to reverse global warming, and to basically stabilize the world's climate and ecosystems. So So that's a big deal, and the science supporting that, which has been, you know, a lot of it is new science just from the last 10 years, but where they're really figuring out how Gaia, how this living planet functions. That science identifies Yellowstone's bison as one of the 20 key mammals for restoring ecosystems around the world. And for Yellowstone, of course, it's about restoring grassland ecosystems. And grasslands, you know, everybody thinks about climate drawdown in terms of planting trees or protecting forests, which is all, of course, very important. But according to the science, grasslands actually have the greatest potential for sequestering carbon from the atmosphere. And the way you do that is by getting the keystone species back on those grasslands up and down the Front Range from Mexico up into Canada. If you restore bison to the unoccupied grasslands, these have been very busy in cataloging those grasslands and prioritizing them for which ones have the highest potential for restoration and so forth, and beginning to get buffalo out on those grasslands, usually working with local tribes. That is sort of what the 30-30-50-50 proposal is about, because we can pretty quickly secure about 30% of the ecosystems, you know, in a functional way. But to get from 30 to 50, we have to have these sort of climate transition zones where humans and are working with keystone species in the local ecosystems to restore the ecosystems to higher trophic function.
Thank you, Tom. You were talking about this global diversity framework of the Montreal Conference of the Parties of the Convention on Biological Diversity. You're talking about the ecological recovery and indigenous leadership. Talk about that for a second for our listeners.
Sure. So this United Nations and, you know, the IPCC, the climate scientists, you know, it's just thousands of scientists around the world, right, and acting through the United Nations. I mean, they're very clear that the way we're going to resolve the climate crisis is by honoring and restoring indigenous, or empowering and centering, I would say, indigenous wisdom and traditional ecological knowledge, because Western science is what's gotten us into this mess, you know. And 80% of the world's biodiversity is presently maintained by 5% on 5% of the lands controlled by indigenous peoples in the world. So they have the track record. They know more than we do, we being the settlers and science, you know, Western scientists and so forth. But obviously, you know, Western science also has some advantages as well. So by basically combining Western science with traditional ecological knowledge, that's how you restore ecosystems. I mean, it's just simple as that. It's basically because the wisdom of the land is still held in most cases by the people that evolved in those lands. And so for here in the U.S., in Turtle Island, that means, you know, indigenous people, indigenous tribes. And, you know, and indigenous tribes are already doing this, you know, and the Biden administration is making a huge priority out of entering into co-stewardship and co-management agreements with tribes. I think they have like 50 or 60 such agreements in the works right now, and they've already approved, you know, 20 or 30, something like that. So it's all of the crises that we're facing right now globally come down to relationships, you know. I'm a climate psychologist, actually, and so I don't generally use the term climate change. I use the term climate trauma, because the Earth is a living organism, and she's undergoing trauma, and we all feel that because we're part of that organism. But I think tribes, indigenous people, feel it much more acutely. And so the way to resolve trauma is through relationship. Trauma always arises in improper relationship, and it's resolved through restoring proper relations. So that's basically, that's kind of traditional ecological knowledge right there, but it's also basic psychology, and it's also new science of a living planet, you know, of Gaia and how she actually functions. And so it's kind of like these crises are prompting a very encouraging kind of awakening that will, that shows not only that indigenous people are hold a lot of the keys to recovery, but that by engaging traditional ecological knowledge, tribal wisdom, and Western science, we can begin repairing the relationships between settlers and indigenous people and the land. And you can't separate those.
That is very true, Tom. Once again, my condolences to all the family and the families up there about the tragedy in Highway 191 and all the other tragedies that occur up there that you are navigating through. So I know it took a hard hit for you all. Larry.
Tom, I was curious if you're willing to entertain the question. So much of the work that Buffalo Field Campaign does, you know, at the state level as well, right? The federal level too, but also the state level, and particularly Montana and Montana's right, starting with a new Congress today on January 3rd.
Yeah, the legislature is back in session.
Right. And Ryan Zinke, right, who's been elected to the U.S. House, he's representing Montana's 1st Congressional District. And I bring his name up. He was the former head of the Secretary of Interior mm-hmm. during the Trump administration. And, you know, he has a legacy. You know, he resigned due to a legacy of ethical infractions, if you will, at the very least, from oil connections to timber industry connections, and wanting to promote clear cutting of forests as a way to address the wildfires, to even meeting with gaming corporations out of Nevada, while indigenous nations that have gaming operations are seeking permits during his administration. But in coming back to Montana, he's born and raised in Montana. He's misused his position also to advance a development project there in Montana, the 95 Carroll Project near Whitefish. And I was just curious, in terms of the work that you do with Buffalo Field Campaign at the state level in Montana, what does it look like with this new legislature?
That's like you're reading from a script from the series Yellowstone. Well, maybe we've got an idea for a new show there, right? Zinke. obviously, with regard to the state, we're on the defensive, and never more so than during legislative session. Montana's legislature convenes every 2 years, right, this time of year. And of course, they always want to do bad things to Buffalo. You know, that's kind of one of the, it's a red legislature that has been traditionally dominated by ranchers, in part because it's structured that way. How many people can take, you know, 3-4 months off in the middle of winter every 2 years to serve in the legislature? It's, generally, that's easier for ranchers than it is for school teachers or, you know, other folks. And so they love to cause trouble for bison. And we just, you know, all we have on our side is truth. And so we speak when you know, we speak out and do the best we can to neutralize bad legislative ideas and so forth. I think this year they're probably going to be focused to a large extent on what's happening up north and with the American prairie bison. Mm-hmm. And Bureau of Land Management agreeing to allow conversion of cattle allotments to bison allotments to accommodate an expanding herd of domesticated, you know, they were wild bison, but they're domesticating them, you know, at the state's insistence, right? By right. tagging them and fencing them in and stuff like that. But we don't see those issues as separate, obviously. I mean, the way they're treating, I think, you know, from a climate solution, the whole spectrum of wild bison to domestic bison are all very important. You know, there's too many cows and not enough bison, and so we're very supportive of what American Prairie Foundation is doing, and even more supportive of what the Blackfeet tribe is doing, mm-hmm. which is getting wild free-roaming bison back on the land up there in pursuit of the Buffalo Treaty. Mm-hmm. And our executive director, James Holt, is a signatory to the North American Buffalo Treaty, which basically shares our mission to, you know, get buffalo and other native wildlife on the land to exist for their own sake and to give them priority on public lands and to allow herds to maintain self-regulating, sustainable populations. That's our mission, right? And that's kind of what the Buffalo Treaty says as well.
And you're listening to American Indian Airwaves. We're speaking with Tom Woodbury, Communications Director of the Buffalo Field Campaign, on protecting the buffalo relations throughout the Yellowstone State of Montana region and its importance and significance, and the work of the Buffalo Field Campaign and Native American nations are doing to protect the buffalo. And now back to the interview.
And the Blackfeet tribe is going ahead and sort of aggressively reintroducing bison on the reservation. So the long and short of it is that we'll play defense as much as we need to with the Montana legislature and Governor Gianforte, who's, you know, trying to interfere with Park Service management of bison. But I think we have to be more, you know, our resources, we have to play defense. You know, we don't have any choice, and that's traditionally what Buffalo Field Campaign did for many years, you know, but things are changing now, and you know, we are going to end up having buffalo free to roam in the Yellowstone ecosystem. It's just a matter of time. There's too much pressure on hunting and everything for that not to happen. So we need to play offense with the Park Service and Forest Service and the Biden administration and having a, you know, Deb Haaland as Secretary of Interior. Well, you know, this next 2-year window is really important because we don't know that Biden's going to get reelected in 2 years. And they're making a lot of positive changes from the federal level down. So I think it's important, you know, just to sort of wage our battles on both fronts, you know, defensively with what the state's trying to do, but to recognize that actually state's authority for wildlife on federal lands is quite limited, right. Whereas the tribe's off-reservation treaty fishing rights on unoccupied lands, meaning national forest lands outside a national park, is immune from state regulation, according to the U.S. Supreme Court. So the tribes are rising up and asserting their treaty rights more and more, and that's good for bison because eventually it will squeeze the state out of the picture as far as bison on federal lands.
Well, Tom, just like anything else, it's not just personalities and what shenanigans they're involved with.
or the state and federal, but yet this question of volunteers and of people power, if you will, anytime you have healing, yeah, people that recognize what the crisis is and what the harm is in order to some resolution to that, you know. And I think part of the message of this Phil campaign, as well as Tom, your remarks, address the question of what people can do. What can people do? It's, what do you want people to get away from this discussion, take home, and think about it, Tom?
Well, you know, what we have, the Buffalo is our national memo. I mean, there aren't a whole lot of people that hate Buffalo. I think that the people just have to, this is one area where people can take action and feel good about what they're doing in relation to the climate and to their environment and so forth. We can demand restoration of proper relationships with buffalo in particular, wildlife in general, the Safe Wildlife Passage. You know, people can get involved with what's going on in their states as far as improving infrastructure for wildlife. And, you know, recognize that I think it's really important, speaking as a Mayflower child, it's really important for people that have benefited from the settlement of the West to acknowledge the still existing trauma of genocide that was perpetrated on indigenous people. We all live in community with different tribes in the different states, and it's, you know, there's the tribes are rising up now and asserting their own sovereignty and political power, and it's growing because of the recognition and acknowledgement that it needs to, and that's coming from the highest officers in this country, from the Biden administration on down. And people need to get behind that, you know, like we need to acknowledge that that the trauma of genocide and the trauma of ecocide, of trying to wipe out the keystone species for this entire continent, that those are existing problems that have contributed to the situation that we're in, and that we all can work to improve relationships, cross-cultural relationships between tribes and the settlers, and that needs to happen at every level, you know, and it is happening. So I think that's something that people can get involved with at their local level and at the political, you know, however they interact with their legislators and so forth, and support what, you know, the Biden administration is trying to do, support what, like, the Park Service is trying to do in relation to bison in Yellowstone, and support the Forest Service, you know, like Forest Supervisor Mary Erickson of the Gallatin and Custer National Forest. You know, she's revised the forest plan to permit buffalo in the national forest, and we need to give, you know, her support. So it just depends where you're at, but I think wherever you're at, you can help restore proper relationships between human communities and cultures, and between humans and wildlife, and because that's how we're going to come together again as a larger culture and global community.
Thank you, Tom. Now, to our listeners, what if some persons or families or whatnot listen to this discussion, they go, I want to do something. What can they do with the Buffalo Soul Campaign and how you address that?
Well, right now, you know, we're actually finalizing a petition for the world's first Buffalo Bridge. We're
directing the petition to Deb Haaland and Cam Shalley and Mary Erickson, and basically trying to get our federal stewards involved in earmarking some of that infrastructure money for Buffalo Bridge here on the Madison River and outside of Yellowstone. So find our petition. You can find it online and on our website or on our Facebook page. And I think right now, you know, that's an important part of the healing process for us, for the tragedy that we just suffered here. That's a good way to show your support right now. And then going forward, we keep our website up to date with all kinds of action suggestions and keeping people informed on what's happening on the ground, what's going to be happening in the legislature here. We're definitely going to be needing people's support here in Montana to thwart any legislative monkey business. And then just to be involved, politically, you know, I mean, it's important right now. We're coming through a perilous time, I think, as a republic. There's still a lot of polarization out there, and you know, wildlife and buffalo, like, these are the kind of things that promote healing and people coming together and crosses party lines, you know, crosses the polarized debate and so forth. We need to come together and heal as a country, as a community, and as a species, you know. And support us, Buffalo Field Campaign, what we're doing. We've got a lot of really exciting things planned for this year. We really are going to try our best to make this the year of the buffalo. And, you know, we'll be introducing some really exciting initiatives in the very near future. And we have a plan, you know, we have a plan for getting buffalo free to inhabit their natural ecosystem here. And then to get more buffalo on public lands throughout the western states, and actually they're reintroducing buffalo in Florida right now. I think that everything that people can do to support cohabitation between wildlife and their communities helps. Every little bit helps. And that's how we're going to come together and heal as a country.
Well, thank you, Tom Woodbury of the Buffalo Phil Campaign, Protecting the Last Wild Bison, for this interview here on the American Indian Airways.
The moment of silence is over.
And that concludes our show for today here on American Indian Airwaves. We were speaking with Tom Woodbury, Communications Director of the Buffalo Field Campaign, on the work that they and Native American nations throughout the Yellowstone, Montana area are doing to protect the buffalo relations. For more work on the Buffalo Field Campaign, you can visit their website at buffalofieldcampaign.org. A special thank you to our musical guests for the hour, Aragon Star, Koopa Ina, Buffy St. Marie, and the band Blackfire. American Indian Airwaves is mixed and mastered in the studios of Burnt Swamp Studios in Signal Hill, California. For Marcus Lopez, I've been your host for the hour, Larry Smith. Until next time.
And for the innocent, you can't justify why your freedom manifests on their graves. And the blood never comes clean from the guilty minds, nor the hands that hold the chains. In a rhythm of resistance, we still fight for our lives. In this war that never ended, we've outdrawn your lies. Let our for all the lives.
Against our fears, try not to become what we've endured, wearing our souls on a thread. The moment of silence is over.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
Proud to co-sponsor the Village Building Convergence from June 10th to 18th, 2023. This is an annual community building event bringing together community members and neighborhoods to engage in grassroots placemaking and sustainable community building throughout Portland. More information on how to get involved in this year's Village Building Convergence can be found on the website villagebuildingconvergence.com.